Hello, and a really warm welcome to this week's episode of the Yonder Your Dream Business podcast. Gosh, like, I am not having a good day today. I've got a couple of episodes to record today, so God knows what they're going to be like. But welcome to this week's episode. Thank you so much for joining me. I hope you're having a lovely, lovely week. So this week, now, I don't want to put any pressure on, but I've got high hopes for this week because I am interviewing the very lovely Gus, who in brackets, the marketing guru. And Gus is very funny and we laugh when we see each other. So I'm really hoping that we're going to have a bit of a giggle today. Well, you learn some things as well, of course. So please welcome to the podcast, the very lovely Gus. Gus, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. I'm even better now that I've heard that ridiculously fantastic introduction. And it's, I feel pressure now I need to be funny.
It's always funny. Hard when people say that because I think I'm quite funny. And then when people go, oh, no, you are really funny, I then feel like I've got to be really funny.
Yeah,
whereas I'm much better off the cuff.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's got to be natural, right? Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
I did a talk once in Nashville for some seven-figure mastermind, which was very intimidating, but actually it was amazing. And they were all women and they were like, you should do stand-up. And I thought, there's a very big difference to me coming out with a little funny and actually doing stand-up. I'm fairly confident that wouldn't be for me. Fancy a bit of stand-up, Gus?
No way. No, it's, far too much pressure.
Could you imagine?
I like making people laugh when they don't expect it. When they turn up and think this guy's gonna be funny, that's the moment I'm not funny, basically.
And you've been doing some speaking, and obviously, you know, I speak, and I've done funnies, like purposely funnies, on stage, and some of them haven't landed.
Yeah, you know, it's funny you say that actually, because a lot of my I said to somebody the other day, and I shouldn't give away my secrets, but I pre-plan my jokes kind of thing, so I know when I do presentations, I know where I'm gonna stick something funny in. And yeah, sometimes it's kind of, when I write it down, I laugh to myself and I think, this is hilarious, I'm the funniest guy ever. And when you kind of stand up and say it and the room is all quiet, you have to quickly move on. You're like, okay, cool, let's next item.
That is me all over. Like, I will do something and I will laugh about myself for ages. I'll be like, God, I'm hilarious. I will literally like praise myself, pat myself on the back, God, I'm so funny. It is a bit awkward and they don't laugh. Sometimes I have the problem where I don't leave enough of the, I don't let it land fully before I then move on to the next thing because I speak so fast. So that can sometimes be a problem in my world. So just, you know, little tip for you there, Gus.
Really wait for people to laugh. Yeah.
And if they don't get it, maybe follow up with a brumch.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's a good idea. Or I might just have a slide that says laugh. You know, like in
exactly.
The
cue laughter. Yeah.
Now's the time.
I think that is what we should do. That's how they're going to get it. I love it. Gus, okay, now we've pitched you up to be a comedian.
Thanks.
How about we start, as we always do, by you telling us who you are and how you got to do the thing that you do today?
Wow. Okay. So I was born in the late 70s in Coventry.
Yeah.
Waldegrave Hospital. I won't go into that. You know, I'm a Liverpool, like I support Liverpool FC. And I used to tell people I was born in Liverpool because basically people always say, oh, how come you support Liverpool? And so I always used to, I was born in the Paul McCartney Hospital, you know, in the Cilla Black Children's Ward. You know, it was all very made up, you know. Jimmy Tarbuck was the midwife and all that kind of stuff. I was born in Coventry, born and bred in Coventry. Spent my life here until I moved to London and started a marketing degree. And at that point, it kind of all took off. I tried my hand at nearly every subject going and I failed at everything except marketing. And I thought, okay, maybe I should make a career out of this. So that's where it went on. I spent years working for some large companies, international organizations. I worked for local authorities. I then run a pub and a restaurant for a little while. And then I started my own marketing agency, and that's where I've come, and even that is niche. So I help businesses with marketing and marketing strategy and all that kind of stuff, but it starts with LinkedIn. That's kind of where I'd say to people, right, I'll train you on LinkedIn, I'll get you great on LinkedIn, and then we'll do other elements of the marketing mix.
Okay, so a couple of things. First off, I don't think I've interviewed anybody, or they've certainly not alluded to me, that has a marketing degree, because I have a marketing degree. did you start your degree in marketing? I started mine in business, and then within the first year realized that I wanted to sack everything else off other than the marketing. Or did you go just straight in marketing?
So cut a long story short, basically I did business studies as a GCSE, and I thought, oh, this is pretty cool. But then I wanted to be a lawyer, so then they said, oh, you should do history for A level. So I did history for A level and I failed it, so I couldn't be a lawyer. So but then I did also psychology for A level. So then I thought, right, I'll do psychology at university, and I went to university and it was all biology, like we were dissecting brains and stuff like that. And I thought, yeah, this ain't for me. So I started on psychology. I also did a minor in sociology, and I hated sociology because there's no wrong answer. It was just like, it was very wishy-washy. It was just like, everything is right. And I was like, I'm not going to, you know, survive in this. And then I moved into law. I thought, oh, I'll give my hand, you know, try my hand at law. And then I saw how long it was going to take to do a law degree. And I thought, forget this.
I thought law for a while and then thought, forget that.
Exactly. And then I moved into marketing, and that's where it became second nature. Because once I started doing marketing modules, it kind of, for want of a better phrase, it was like, this is so easy. It was like, I go, you know, I could do this standing on my head. And I think that's the thing. When something becomes second nature, it's so much easier to deliver to others as well, kind of thing. So I failed at everything else before settling on marketing, basically. So psychology,
like, what's
sociology.
Left?
Exactly. What's left? I went through the prospectus. It was quite close. It was, you know, I almost got to zebra farming kind of thing. I was that far into the, that's an A to Z joke, by the way. That's for,
we got it.
Good. Cool. But yeah, I got to marketing and I thought, right, yeah, let's try my hand at this. And then luckily I stopped there because
is lucky, because I think if marketing LinkedIn is niche, marketing or not marketing zebras, look, zebra care or whatever the zebra thing was, very niche. Not sure what the prospects were like for that. I kind of, like I said, I started in a business degree thinking I actually was very good at maths, so I thought I would go down like a finance route, and then realize finance had nothing to do with maths. And it wasn't just adding things up, which was a bit disappointing. So and then I start, like you, I started doing marketing and going, this is like, I can do it. I'm asleep. Like, get it. I get everything. So yeah, I loved it. And I love the fact that I have a degree in marketing. Mm. I think for us doing the roles that we do, I know, like you, I don't know what year you did your degree, and I don't even think I can remember what year I did my degree, but I know that what they taught me obviously is not the world we live in now. Mm. And websites weren't even, like, they were a thing, but they weren't like really a big thing that they talked about. However, obviously the strategy and the thoughts and stuff behind it is, so I still feel pretty happy that I've got that degree.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel the same. I think the theory will never change. You know, ultimately you're promoting a product or a service for somebody to buy, and you want to make a, you know, you want to make a profit. That's, you know, the ultimate the underlying theory. But the purpose of a marketing degree, not that I want to kind of brag about this, but I went on to study two postgraduate qualifications in
you marketing. Were much better than me then, Gus.
Yeah, marketing and marcoms. I'm a member of the Chartered Institute of Marketing and all that. I have loads of letters after my name. But the point is that I think a lot of I think a lot of people kind of, a lot of other people think that marketing is second nature as well. And it's kind of like they'll just try their hand at something and think, well, you know, I'm now a Facebook specialist, so that makes me a marketer. Or I can, you know, I can write copy and that makes me a marketer. And that's not always the case. So I know there are marketers who haven't got a marketing degree that get very, they get that, you know, their knickers in a twist about the fact that when I turn around and say, well, actually, no, I've got loads of letters after my name and I've done all the theory. And, you know, I did marketing before social media was a thing, before Facebook or LinkedIn or Instagram, anything was invented, because the theory will never change. And I'm glad that I've got that grounding, basically.
And it won't. And I think this is the thing for me, one of my superpowers, and I think this has got to come from my degree, is that I can put myself in customers' shoes very quickly and easily. So someone can come to me and go, this is who we work with. And I can kind of very quickly go, okay, well, this is the type of person I probably am. This is probably what I'm interested in. This is how you probably talk to me. Like, I feel like I can shift from one business to another really quickly. And you must have seen this, and this episode was definitely not about slagging off anybody that doesn't have a marketing degree, I can assure you. However, I used to get, and probably would still get, a little bit frustrated in people who, like, so for instance, I worked with someone who had, she worked for me years ago, and she basically was an influencer, and she was a travel influencer, and she built a very good, successful Instagram. And I used to have a tourism board that we used to do Instagram for. So she was a perfect match because it was very much in her wheelhouse, very much in her zone of genius. However, just because someone has built something themselves does not mean they can then go and market anything. Because I've marketed, we'll have a market off, right? I've marketed chicken, i.e. processed chicken. Awesome. I've marketed telescopic slides. So, you know, when you're in a car and you lift the thing and your seat slides forward or slides back, obviously I've got a fancy car, so I just press a button, but I remember those cars. but like, those are telescopic slides. And like, if you've got, if you're pulling out like a big server on big, it's like the sliding, like I've marketed stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I think that's what marketing helps us do. We can market stuff like that. What have you, what's your most obscure? Oh, I've got another one as well.
Wow. What's my most obscure? So I have marketed a sub-region of where I live. I always used to work in automotive and advanced engineering and all that kind of stuff. So that's kind of my background. So it's, I used to work in vehicle rental.
Oh, yeah, so, yeah.
You know, I marketed Mercedes Sprinters and Ford Transits.
Nice.
And I was nominated for an award, which was called the Tranny Award. But Tranny is an abbreviation of transit, just so everybody knows. So, for example, thankfully, I didn't win.
Very
I didn't want
to
say
award. To be
it's
fair,
it's a very niche award. Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad I didn't win, so I didn't put on my CV. I'm a winner of a Tranny Award. That would be very strange. So yeah, and you know, it's all that. I used to work in motorsport and etc. So vans, cars, you know, motorsport, all yeah. that kind of stuff. So I don't think there's anything too obscure. Although I used to work for a local authority, that's pretty obscure in itself.
Yeah, yeah. I've done marketing for children's care homes.
Yeah,
I mean, that's random.
Yeah. Yeah.
I also worked in the car industry. I worked for a company that bought, this is interesting, our lives might have crossed, Gus, although I'm a bit older than you, I think. I worked for a company that bought X rental cars and sold them to dealerships. So they would go to someone like Enterprise and buy as they all like, because obviously rental cars can only be on their books for so long and then they have to be gone because they get too old. Like when we say old, they're like 6 months old. They would buy like hundreds of them and then we would sell them to dealerships, or not dealerships, independent dealerships all around the country. And then I've also marketed adult toys. I've done it all, Gus.
You mean like PlayStations and stuff, I presume? No, don't no, stop there. I get it.
Yeah, not what I mean. Yeah. No. It was fascinating. It was, but it's funny because this is the thing. We're trained in marketing to go, there's a product, there's a customer, there's a need, there's a pain point, there's a like, and just put our marketing thing on it. So it almost kind of doesn't matter what the product, who the customer, or any of that, you just put your kind of blueprint back on it and go, okay, how does this work?
Yeah, absolutely. I think all marketers, all proper marketers, have a marketing toolkit, like a marketing blueprint that they will kind of, they can overlay onto whatever the product or the service is. And, you know, we can talk about acronyms like the 4 P's and the 7 P's and PESTEL and SOSTAC and DAGMAR and ADAR and all these other kind of things. And, you know, and then we intersperse it with a bit of psychology, like Maslow's hierarchy of needs and all that kind of stuff. And it all come, you know, and we say all this fancy stuff and use all these, you know, long words and all that kind of stuff. But ultimately, it's the blueprint that kind of we overlay onto anything that can then deliver that. And I think that comes from knowing the theory, knowing the stuff behind stuff. So we could quite literally market
anything
and anyone. Yeah, yeah. And that's where
Snow
we
to
come.
Eskimos is the favorite one, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. And now that we run our own businesses, I think that's the thing that we can, whoever comes in, because people always say, well, what's your niche? And I normally say, well, service industry businesses, which sounds like everybody says that, right? But it's kind of, it doesn't matter if you work in HR or accountancy or wealth management or photography or videography, I can market your business because ultimately I understand the marketing.
Yes. And I think that's why I've never had a niche, because I can market anything. This is so cool. I don't think I've ever spoken to a marketer like this before, but it's really interesting.
Yeah.
So tell me then, and we're going, I did tell you we'd go around whatever direction that we took us, and this is taking us a different direction. But
I love it.
So when it came to your own stuff, because I'm going to use the word arrogantly, and I'm not arrogant, but I think I confidently walked into having my own business and going, but I know marketing, so I can market myself, no problem. And I couldn't. I found it really hard. How do you find marketing yourself?
Particularly in the first couple of years of my business, it was really hard. And the reason I started my business was because I left a long and illustrious marketing career to then run my local pub. And what I discovered was that without social media, without proper marketing, etc., I wouldn't get bums on seats.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, marketing is more or less a full, you know, full-time job. So when I started my own agency, the whole idea was that I was going to help other businesses. And particularly my first couple of clients were like other pubs and my competitors. So I kind of went to them and said, this is what I do. So it's very easy to do it for other people. But when I was marketing my own agency, it's very difficult. Like the cobbler's children don't wear shoes and all that kind of stuff. It's very difficult to market your own business. And so the first couple of years were really hard. So I could do it for anybody else. Yeah. I could do it standing on my head. But when it comes to myself, I think as business owners, we don't. And again, obviously, as you are well aware as a coach, I know it's a lot of what you deliver. We don't spend time working on our business. We spend all our days trying to help other people, and therefore we make money and pay our bills by helping others. And sometimes we have to just sit back and say, well, how do we do this for ourselves?
Yeah. And it really shocked me how much I thought it would be easy and how not easy it was. And even now, this is why I still have coaches. This is why I still get help. I was with lovely Becky Hollis the other day. So Becky Hollis she worked with me for a long time. I met her when she did her degree in marketing. She was doing a dissertation on social media, I think it was. And she found me on the internet and interviewed me and asked if she could interview me. And I was like, yes. So then she came into my world, and then she just kept coming back into my world and back into my world. And eventually she worked for me. And I saw her the other day, and it was so funny because obviously I've coached her for years and years at her business, by the way, Gus. She has just done, I'm like a pride parent. She is amazing.
Yeah.
And I sat with her the other day and I'm chatting away, and I was showing her something. I'd done a reel. I was feeling very proud of myself. And she looked at it and she went, it's too long. This, change this, do this, do that. And it was like, and then she went, oh my God, I'm so sorry, T. Is that, I'm so sorry. Because obviously it was like roles reversed. And I was like, it's fine, Becky, because like, I can't do it for myself. I can't look subjectively to myself. I need someone else to look in and go, actually, this would be better this way. Or, you know, this is how I think about it or whatever. So, yeah.
Absolutely. You know, I always, it's funny you say that because I'm doing this coaching program at the moment, as in receiving coaching. I was saying to the coach,
not by me,
not by you. No, this is a
get
free
off the
program.
Podcast.
This is a free program. So yeah.
Fine then.
So and if that goes well and I make enough money, I'll be able to pay you.
Thanks,
very
great.
Soon.
I look forward to it.
That's the important thing. Yeah, yeah. So and I wouldn't go anywhere else. You know.
Well, I'm glad to hear it.
But what I was saying was, what I said to this business coach was that I very much sometimes feel like, I don't want to bore anybody with history, but it's the whole Leon Trotsky thing. So when Leon Trotsky and kind of Stalin were going to replace Lenin, Leon Trotsky thought he was great. He was like, he didn't have to promote himself. He thought he was a shoo-in for the job. And he just kind of told everybody, I'm great at what I do. That's the way it is. Ultimately, he was killed with a pickaxe in the middle of the mountains. But that's a different story. But it's that sometimes it's that arrogance of, I'm brilliant at marketing, so I should be able to do this. It's nice and easy for me, kind of thing. And it's not until you actually get into the weeds and you think, you know, sometimes you need those other people to tell you, well, this is how it is, or this is how I can help, or this is what you should do, etc. And it's kind of those epiphanies where you think, oh, really, I should know that, but I spend too long working with other people and working for other people and helping other people make money and all that kind of stuff. So,
and I totally get that. Always learn something. Like I constantly learn things, and not so much about the marketing basics, because we know that, and we know the strategies, and we know the like that sort of stuff, but I constantly look at, you know, I didn't used to look at other people's stuff, and I'm now opening back up to it in terms of like going, oh, okay, that's interesting, they did this and that was the result they got, and this is a thing, because it is such a moving feast, although the strategy remains the foundations, and if you've got that wrong, then you're a little bit buggered. But the we've got that bit, but sometimes the way we use those, or sometimes the way the tools that we use on top of that strategy can be different, and it's interesting to see. And I think we've just got to stay open and curious and just be like, you know, who's doing what and how could that be good and could it work for us and that sort of thing. So yeah. I think I have no problem in someone sharing their thoughts with me about my stuff. Some people has a better weight than others in terms as to whether I'll listen to it, but of course, they can share, absolutely fine, not a problem.
Yeah.
Anyway, we've whittled on about this too long, although I do have to say one more thing, right? Go on. You did a marketing degree, 4 P's, you would know who Philip Kotler is.
You know, just in my head, I was just about to mention that, because when somebody says to me, oh, I do marketing, or, you know, I've got a marketing background, etc., I always ask, what was the last Philip Kotler book you read, kind of thing, because most people are like, who? And it's fascinating, because, and actually on that note, so my business is called The M Guru, and The M, unsurprisingly, stands for marketing. Now, Philip Kotler is the original marketing guru, and that's kind of what everybody knows him as and what he calls himself. Yeah. And if you Google the marketing guru, the Philip Kotler, you know, comes up. And it was when I was studying marketing, and then when I got my first job, it was my boss at the time that said to me, oh, you're like our marketing guru. And that's kind of where the name stuck. So I thought, I'm going to run a business with that name. But obviously it's trademarked and copyrighted elsewhere. So hence why I shortened it to M. But anyway, it came from Philip Kotler, and that's the thing. And I think most good marketers should know who Philip Kotler is. So it's always a question I ask when somebody says, oh, I'm just like you. And I'm like, yeah, you're really not, mate.
Did you know that I spoke at his only UK event he's ever done?
No way, really? I did not know that. That's amazing.
And I nearly, like, first off, this is like, between, you know, you, I, and the rest of the podcast listeners, sure. When they approached me, I thought he was dead, right? Because he was old when we did our degree, when I did my degree. He was the marketing guru. I assumed this guy was ancient and there was no way he'd still be alive now. No, he's very much alive. And he did an event in the UK. So he has World Marketing something or other, and he does events all around the world, and he was bringing his first one to the UK, and somehow they found me through my TEDx, which was awesome. And then they contacted me and said, would you speak? And I was like the only professor, the only one that wasn't a professor. The rest of them were professors. And obviously a lot of the speakers spoke like they were professors, and everyone was university students.
Sure.
And there was a lot of university students. That was kind of the point of it. Hmm. And then of course I get on being like, some crazy woman. Yeah. Anyway, but it was madness to actually stand next to him and be like, I learned from your book at university and now I'm speaking at your event. Like, this is mind blowing. And then we did one over lockdown. So he then did the World Marketing Summit, which again was going to university students. So it's not my audience. However, if he asks you to do something, you're not going to say no. We did an event. It got streamed to 104 countries and it had 500,000 people attend the event.
Sheesh.
That's nuts, isn't it?
That's quite the audience. Nuts. Yeah, absolutely.
And I was getting all these DMs from very strange countries, as in the countries aren't strange, but it was just odd. So I was getting DMs from Pakistan. I was getting DMs from just, you know, a lot of countries that my husband had been to in the military, which obviously he was like, what are you doing? But and there was pictures. They would take a photo of me on their TV at whatever country they were in and DM me going, thank you, Mr. Reza. It was so hard. And I was just like, this is nuts.
That is nuts. That's mind blowing. And it's, I mean, first of all, the fact that he asked you back, I mean, that's, you know, that's one
thing. I know, right?
Yeah, I know. Amazing. But the fact that they found you in the first place, you got to stand next to Philip Kotler and kind of deliver on the same bill and all that kind of stuff. I mean, that's crazy. Unbelievable. It's
for an apprentice degree person. That is goals.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Holy God. And, you know, it's funny you say that, because one of my goals was always to be on your podcast. So that's the thing. So I know where you're coming from now. Yeah.
Well, thanks, Gus. So we better give these people some content. Hope you've enjoyed that. I've had a lovely time.
This is great. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
We're just nice chatting. To see. So you are the number one LinkedIn trainer, as said by your mum, which
according
I love.
According to my mum, absolutely.
Yeah, well done. Because his mum. Also, sorry, the other thing I was thinking about, because you've done all these post-grad stuff. Are you a doctor? I think Dr. G would be great brand name.
That would be, but no, I'm not a doctor. No,
that's a shame.
I might look into it. Yeah, PhD of.
I think I would marketing. Just do one just for the brand of Dr. G.
Yeah.
The marketing guru.
I could. Yeah, I should try that. Yeah.
I think that's really cool.
Leave that with me.
Yeah, I mean, it won't take long to do a doctor, I'm sure.
No,
10 minutes should be fine.
Yeah.
Just buy one off the internet.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk. LinkedIn. Okay, so why did you pick LinkedIn? What was it that it did for you?
So it's where I started to get most of my leads. LinkedIn is the place where I started to get most of my leads when I first started my business. So I tried my hand at Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, and I still do kind of those because I very much like to keep my hand in kind of like most social media platforms. But LinkedIn was the one where I was getting the most interaction, the most engagement, etc. And actually, it was the place where I was, you probably found the realest me, if that makes sense. Everywhere else was very, because on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, etc., you have your business accounts, alongside your personal account. So I was Gus Bandel personally, and then professionally, the M Guru kind of thing. Whereas on LinkedIn, you focus on your personal profile.
Yeah.
So just, you know, I was Gus Bandel, but I was the real Gus Bandel. So it's where I told stories and where I kind of would share my life and all that kind of stuff and et cetera, as opposed to everywhere else where I said, oh, I know this in marketing and you should kind of buy my services and all that kind of stuff. So I chose LinkedIn because it's the place where I could really be me and really kind of push forward on that. And when I started getting leads and inbound leads and all that kind of stuff, I thought, oh, actually, there are some people out there that like me. So I thought, kind of go all in on it. Yeah.
And surprise, I guess.
It was surprising. Yeah. Thanks.
So that's interesting, because I think if I was to ask people which is the platform you're most real on or most you on, I don't think many people would say LinkedIn, because I think, and I'd love to get your thoughts on this, I think there is a history of, well, LinkedIn is just business. So you just show up business. And must have been, I don't know, 5 years ago, I was at Social Media Marketing World. And, oh man, who was it? I can't remember his name. He's pretty big in our space. He was talking about, actually, he's just chucking everything on LinkedIn. And I remember at the time sitting there watching it thinking, you're doing what? What is this craziness? But like, how do you feel about that? Is it somewhere we should be putting our real selves? Is it somewhere, like at the weekend, I don't know if you've seen my Instagram, and I hate saying that because it makes me sound like a right idiot, but my Instagram this weekend, I was sorting out my dad's house. My dad's moving house. Well, he's actually moving with my sister after 50 years of living in our childhood home.
Wow.
And we are going through the home of 50 years worth of stuff. It is a lot of work.
No doubt.
I am finding all the photos. So I put some photos of me up on Instagram. I was a stunning looking teenager, I can tell you that.
I have no doubt.
Someone replied to me. It was brilliant, saying, this is more Nigel than Nigella.
Nice.
Yeah, that's how good those photos are. So obviously I did a story in the morning and I'd got my hair plaited. I'd got my hoodie on because I was like, I'm going to my dad's. I'm sorting out his house. Do you want to see any embarrassing photos of me? Put up a poll. Obviously, everyone said yes, because, you know, who doesn't?
Yeah.
And then put some photos of me. Like, is that the stuff I should be putting on LinkedIn? Like, how personal and real are we being?
The short answer is we have to be as real and as personable as possible, I think. And, you know, we live in a world now where people buy from people. It's very, you know, most of the big brands have a face kind of thing.
Yeah.
When we think about Bill Gates and Mark Zuckerberg and Elon Musk and Richard Branson and et cetera, et cetera. You know, a lot of big brands have a face, and most of those personal brands have a bigger following than the companies that they run.
Mm-hmm.
And if we bring this down to a mere mortal level for us, I think, you know, people buy from us. And what I always say is it's a case of making yourself ungoogleable. That is a word, I just made it up. But it's I do this a lot in presentations. It's about when people think about what you do for a living, you don't want them to go to Google, because as soon as they do that, they, you know, you've lost them. So if somebody goes to Google and types in social media manager or LinkedIn trainer, etc., me personally as Gus, I'm not on page one, so I've lost people.
Yeah.
The point, what I do is I post as much content about myself on LinkedIn so that when people think I need a social media manager, I need a LinkedIn trainer, I need help with this, rather than go to Google, they think of my name, kind of thing. And I think it's that, because people buy from people, I think that's where LinkedIn is the number one platform for mm-hmm. us to kind of share that information with people.
So let's like talk, you know, basics. What type of things are you posting? How are you, you know, when I think personal stuff, like what I posted yesterday, it has nothing to do with what I do as a business. It was literally, this is what I'm doing on my Sunday. How, if that's the right kind of content to put on there, the question I used to get from everybody when I talked about social media was, well, that's not going to buy from you. They're not going to know me as Teresa, the kick-ass coach. Like, so what type of stuff are you posting, and what's the mix of like sales and personal and that sort of stuff?
So personally, first of all, in terms of the numbers, I have an arbitrary figure of roughly around 70-30. So basically 70% of my content is personable content. Okay. Ultimately, as business people, we have to sell. We have to tell the world, well, this is what we do. So, you know, for you, it would be, here are some, you know, old school photos, or here's me making a lasagna, or here's me yeah. delivering a talk, or here's me going networking, and then intersperse that with the 30% of I'm a kick-ass coach. This is what yeah. I do. This is how I help, and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's the two stories that intertwine that kind of get people together to say, well, actually, yes, she's a business coach. But obviously, if I went to Google and just typed in business coach, there's a million pages, right? Yeah, what I want to know is, who is a business coach that I like, that I can get on with, that I think is fun, that I, you know, and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. If I'm looking for fun, if it's just, oh, I'm looking for somebody really professional and boring, then your content should be professional and boring. It's that.
Yeah, then don't.
That's not you, right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So it's that element of, you still have to sell, but actually you have to tell the world about the kind of person that you are. So in terms of the content that I post, it is very much the, you know, this is what I'm doing with my week. This is what I'm up to. I'm going networking. I've got speaking gigs. I've just bought some orange trainers. I've eating some Terry's chocolate orange, you know, et cetera. It's all that interspersed. It's what I don't do. I never talk about my wife or my child.
Personal preference?
That's just personal preference. Yeah. It's just not something I do. But and it's not, weirdly, it's not intentional. It just works out that way, because I'd rather, you know, I'm very self-involved. I'd rather just talk about me. You know what I mean? I don't want anybody else taking the limelight. So that's the other thing.
And kids are normally cuter. People like them. So you're probably, you know.
Exactly. I mean, he's almost as cute as me. Yeah. Don't tell him I said that. So, it's that case of, you know, what makes you tick? What's the kind of person that you are? And I think that's where you, people resonate with you. So, for example, a lot of my content is comparatively inane. It's not overly professional, etc. But I get a lot of clients who come to me and say, we want you to teach us how to be personable on LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. One client specifically said, you write a lot of shit on LinkedIn. Can you do that for me as well? Great. Yeah, that's exactly, you know, and that was the exact quote kind of thing. And
I love
great,
it.
So it's that element of your vibe attracts your tribe. I know that's a very trite thing, but it's true.
Yeah. So what about, what shouldn't we be doing on LinkedIn?
I think you shouldn't only be posting about work. If all of your content is, this is what I do, you know, I'm running strategy days, I do marketing strategy, I do this, I do marketing, I do social media, I can help you with this, I can help you with that, ultimately your audience will eventually switch off, because they'll think, well, yeah, this person does that, but that's it. What I want to know is all the other bits that will mark you out, like, different to everybody else. The bits that will make you ungoogleable. I don't want to go to Google to search for someone like you. I want to find you on LinkedIn or any social media and work out that you're the person I want to work with. Mm-hmm. Once people go to Google, once people leave and start searching for the job that you do, you've lost them, basically. So it's the idea of telling enough stories. So what you shouldn't do is only post about work or only post the professional stuff, because people switch off to that. I think there becomes a kind of, you know, blind side where people just think, I know what they do now.
And then
people stop interacting, they stop engaging, and then you fall out of the mind's eye. So at the moment they are ready, they're not thinking of you because you're just like everybody else.
And how do you know that? How do you know if, like, so my engagement on LinkedIn is not amazing, So what am I, but we're posting regularly. So what am I doing wrong, or what should I be doing to help increase that engagement?
Have you posted photos of you as a child, or the photos
not,
that you found?
Not on LinkedIn, no.
No, exactly. So that's what you should do. And that's and not just specifically that, but lots of things. Like I know, like I can go through your Instagram and learn all about you because I know you post that on Instagram. If you shared that content onto LinkedIn, your engagement will go up. I can't guarantee that, obviously, but in theory, your engagement will go up. Just on that note, what I should say is everything that I teach on LinkedIn, everything that I train people with, everything that I talk about is from personal experience. Yeah. I have read all the LinkedIn books. I follow all the LinkedIn, other LinkedIn trainers and all that kind of stuff, but I deliver work. So I can kind of say, this is what's worked for me. This is what's worked for my clients. This is what I can see. And I think in particular, when you start telling those, when I started telling personal stories and started talking about my my life and journaling my week and all that kind of stuff,
yeah,
I started getting more leads. And it was people that wanted to talk to me, wanted to kind of be in my, you know, fall into my force field, etc. So for you, I think it's sharing that personal content without being too personal. It's more about this is what's going on in my life rather than kind of saying, oh, you know, here, you know, here's my daily bowel movements or anything.
Yeah, I'm having a breakdown or something.
Yeah.
Keep
yeah,
that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, yeah.
You know, it was so funny. Go on.
You could share, well, I'm having a breakdown, and you'll get a lot of empathy and all that kind of stuff. But at the same time, you know, do we want a business coach that has breakdowns? I don't know. It's kind of, you're supposed to help us with our breakdowns.
Exactly. You know? Exactly. Yeah, yeah. I'm meant to be way over my breakdowns by the time I coach other people.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah.
It was funny. I did, obviously I have someone help my social media, and I did a thing a few months back where I very bravely got into swimwear and went and stood on a beach, all part of this thing with Bryony Gordon, who's a Telegraph journalist. And there was an ulterior motive, which will eventually come out at some point as to why I wanted to get in front of Bryony. But anyway, in order to get in front of Bryony, I had to get in my swimwear and stand on a beach and have photos taken. Mm-hmm. And there was a competition, and I thought, oh, I'll just enter the competition, which was to win swimwear from a brand called Curvy Kate. And I won. So not only was I going to this thing and going to get in swimwear, I'm now wearing one of their swimwears, and they were sponsors of it. So I ended up on their social media with like 400,000 plus followers across all their social media platforms. Me stood full picture in swimwear, which I cannot tell you how out of my comfort zone that was. And after a little while, Becky said to me, can we do a post about it? Because I put it in an email and it was on my stories. So I was like, right, so you should send me some pictures that you're comfortable with. So I found a few pictures that I was semi-comfortable with, but still pushing myself a bit in my comfort zone. And without even thinking about it or talking about it, Becky just did what she normally does. And she posted to Insta, to Facebook, and to LinkedIn.
Wow.
And I didn't even realize. So I'm sat there one day, and I go into LinkedIn and get lots of notifications. I'm like, what's going on here then? And there's me in my swimwear on LinkedIn, and like old clients, old male clients going, oh, well done, T, excellent T. And I am just like, oh, what have you done? And I messaged her going, you put it on LinkedIn. She was like, why wouldn't I? Don't put it on LinkedIn. But she did. And the engagement was kick-ass.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not just because you were in a bikini. I mean, I'm sure that helped, but it's the fact that it's real life. But there was a purpose, right? There was a purpose. Yeah. So it was, you know, it was for a good cause and all that kind of mm-hmm. stuff, etc. I mean, I've made a note here, Curvy K, go check out the website, ASAP kind of thing, etc. Yeah, bookmark it and all that kind of stuff. But that's a different story. That's a different podcast. Yeah, exactly. But it's that real life element. Do you know what I mean? And I don't want to talk about the dark side of LinkedIn, because I think LinkedIn is great and it's the best platform ever, etc. But
think we should, you know, light and dark together. Yeah.
Yeah. There's always that element of, well, you know, how much of that engagement is because you're an attractive woman in a bikini, you know, and it's, you know, but there's that, and we can attribute it to like DMs and all that kind of stuff, etc. But ultimately, I think for the most part, most people on LinkedIn, although it's a professional setting, and they recently, at the time of recording this podcast, they recently announced that they've, you know, hit 1 billion members, etc. It's 1 billion professionals, so people on there who want to talk to each other. But to separate ourselves from the other 1 billion people on there, we share these photos of us or share our bits of our lives, etc. If you just went on there and just said every day and said, I'm a kick-ass business coach, eventually people would switch off. And I think it's that, that element.
How much proactive engagement do you do other than just posting? And what does it look like?
So somebody said to me the other day, they said, oh, you know, you're all over LinkedIn. You're like, we see you every day. And I said, well, actually, I only post twice a week, 2 to 3 times a week. It's like an optimal amount. But people will see me every day because I do a lot of outbound engagement. So what I normally said, like, I have an arbitrary figure of 10 to 1, basically. So for every post I post, I engage with a client with like 10 other posts, etc. And when I say engage, I mean like actual, like reading it, commenting on it, you know, etc.
Genuine responses.
Yeah, exactly. And not just for the sake of it. I don't just scroll through my feed and pick the first 10 posts. I pick the ones that are relevant to me, or the ones that my ideal clients would see, or the ones where I want my network to see, and all that kind of stuff. So again, like I said, it's an arbitrary figure, but I do a lot of outbound engagement because I think that's where the gold is. The gold is in the engagement. It's, you know, all marketers will say the key word in social media is social, right? So it's all about that. That personality, that being personable, engaging with each other, treating it like a networking event, etc. So I do a lot of outbound engagement, whereas I don't post every day, you know.
I think, you know, to some people that must be a blessed relief to not have to post every day. But also, there's something pretty rewarding about LinkedIn because you're not fighting. Now, yes, they've got a huge following, but as we stand at the moment, and correct me if I'm wrong, it still has pretty good, like the algorithm's still pretty kind to us. We still get, like you said, you can post a couple of times a week and that the lifetime of that post will last. Like in terms of something like Instagram, or I mean, I've now actually come off Twitter. My account's still there, but I've basically said I'm not on here because it is a very, it's just a really interesting place to be and not one I want to be. So
it's accessible. Yeah.
So I paused that. And Facebook is just so that I can advertise when I advertise and we post to there. But really for me, I think LinkedIn and Insta are going to be the two that we focus on. But it is better from a spending time and getting rewards back than something like Insta, would you say?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the algorithm still rewards people that use the platform how it's supposed to be used. And there's lots of people that will trot out the old kind of the stats. So, for example, only 1% of people on LinkedIn post consistently, for example. So just by posting, you know, once or twice a week, you're better than 99% of the billion people that are on there, for example. The other thing is, there's no reason to post every day. There is a reason to do the outbound engagement. But the way the algorithm works is it will recognize that people are using the platform and then will share your content with more people and with your audience, etc. Related to that, LinkedIn is still the only place you get to curate your own audience. Everywhere else, like Instagram or Twitter or Facebook, etc., you have to rely on people following you. On LinkedIn, you get to use the search box and find exactly who you want to talk to. And if you connect with them and they accept your connection request, all of a sudden you've got a positive echo chamber of exactly the people that you need to speak to, which then helps to grow your engagement because your ideal clients are the ones reading your content because they're the ones you've connected to.
How do you, one last question, because I'm conscious of our time because we talk so much about marketing and but how do you manage, because I know one of the things that puts people off and certainly puts me off is I get a ton of connection requests and they're just like, I'm going to say they're spam, but they're not actual spam. They are real people, but they have an objective in mind. And inevitably that objective is to probably sell to me. How do you manage with that side of LinkedIn? The cold DMs, the connecting, hey, I just wanted to connect with you. Oh, have you seen this thing? Like, how do you manage with that and not get too like, I can't even cope with it anymore?
So personally, so when I receive a terrible connection request, if it's one that's kind of basically said, hey, this is what I do for a living, you know, we should book a call or whatever, I would respond and say, well, actually, I do LinkedIn training and what you've done is not wrong and not the right way to do it. So how about you book a call with me first kind of thing, you know, and all. So I do that kind of thing. And obviously, it's a very low success rate, to be honest, because people, you know, when you tell people that they're wrong, they don't like it.
No, funny.
Yeah, it's funny that, right? So, but I always do my due diligence. So whoever is coming in and however they, because ultimately people have to sell. And I think people have just been trained badly. I think that's the thing, as opposed to people being purposely rude or anything like that. So I always do my due diligence. If it's somebody that I could either work with, somebody that could either be a client or a supplier, or is good for my network, or we have lots of mutual connections, or we're both based in the UK and all that kind of stuff, then I'll normally accept. At the moment, they kind of hit me with a pitch without actually getting to know me, etc. Then it's a delete. It's kind of like, thanks, but no thanks. I'm now going to delete you because I don't want you to doing that to my network, etc. So, so it's all about doing that due diligence. But yeah, it's making sure that somebody fits the profile of the people that you want to be connected to. Like, I don't connect with, for example, people from India or Pakistan or etc. Because I know at some, like, for example, an SEO specialist in India, they don't have a network that's going to be suitable for me. I'm not going to use them for my work, etc. So I just don't connect, etc. If it's somebody UK based, if it, you know, etc. As long as they've sent the right message or they have the right things on their profile or your mutual connections, then I accept. But it's all about the due diligence. It kind of takes time to create the perfect audience.
So two quick fire questions, even though I said that was the last one. First one is, do you get people to follow you or do you get them to connect?
Ideally, I get them to connect. LinkedIn is a massive networking platform, so I'd rather have two-way conversations, etc. So I could talk for days about this, but it's all about creator mode. So I've got creator mode switched on, which turns the connect button to a follow button. So when I meet people, I always say, please click the three dots and connect with me, as opposed to following me. But also on the flip side, what I do is I go through my followers, anybody that has just clicked follow and not connected, I go through, and if there's anybody interesting, I'll connect to them, basically. So, but in an ideal world, you want to connect as opposed to follow.
And then the last one, is it just a case of, and I'm sure that I probably have given this advice in the past, like connect with as many people, or are you really trying to curate your feed and therefore you're being very strict? So for instance, if we were friends, but I was in a completely different industry, doing a completely different thing, you wouldn't connect with me because you wouldn't want me to mess up your algorithm. Like, is it like that or what?
So I don't believe that you should have a massive following. Like, don't just connect to anyone and everyone. There's no, the numbers, you know, they're just vanity metrics, right? They don't mean anything. And I know there's lots of LinkedIn trainers that say, hey, I got to 100,000, you know, followers and stuff. And it's like, yeah, but nobody likes you anyway, kind of thing. Yeah, like, regardless. So, you know, I almost use profanity then, but I won't. But yeah, everybody still thinks you're a, you know, but on the flip side, it's about curating the perfect audience. So even if you meet somebody and you think, well, they're not an ideal client, they're never going to buy from me, I'm never going to buy from them, it's about people's networks, for example. So it's where, you know, what I call the octopus tentacle to go through the network and start sucking people back into you. So you may not be my ideal client, but I'll connect to you because you might be connected to people that would want to use my services, and vice versa. You know, I'll have people in my network that want to use you. And when we engage with each other, those networks kind of see each other. So it's just that, you know, the whole 6 degrees of separation thing.
So you can follow anybody or get anybody to connect with you. However, just don't do it just for numbers.
Don't do it willy-nilly, as they say. It's not about the numbers. It's not about just, you know, having a massive following, because ultimately there's only a small part of your audience at any time that will see your content anyway. So if the more people that you connect to, the larger your audience is, the tougher it is to get to the people that actually should be ultimately giving you money, basically.
Gus, thank you so much. I have loved talking to you. It has been such fun, as I knew it would. Obviously, well, it would have been funny if I go, where can people find you? You go, I'm not on LinkedIn. How can they find you? What are they searching for to find you?
So you can either search for Gus Bandel, or you can search for my hashtag, which is MGuruUK. And if you like, literally, if you go to Google and type in MGuruUK, you'll find out all about me. There's all my, there's my website, all my social media channels, all my memberships, my inside leg measurement, everything. It's all over Google, basically. But MGuruUK.
His OnlyFans account. I'm only joking.
Yeah. No, that's private. You won't find that on Google. That's only on Bing. So.
We always joke. Biz Paul is a very good friend of mine, and I know you know him. And we do like a little mastermind every other Monday where we get on a call and have a chat with each other. And if ever one of us is like, oh, it's tough at the moment, the other one goes, well, it's always OnlyFans.
Yeah. Well, there is. And now that I mean, your OnlyFans is going to be like just an extrapolation of Curvy Kate. So that's so I'm gonna check that out later. I'll send you a check. It'll be fine.
Thanks. Thanks, Gus. Thank you so much, Gus. I really appreciate you having you on the podcast.
The pleasure is absolutely all mine. Thank you, Teresa.
Thank you. So there we go. The lovely, lovely Gus. I hope you enjoyed today's episode. Please do go check him out. Please do tag us in. He is on Instagram. I'm on Insta, as you know. Please let us know what you thought of the episode. We love it when we hear from you. Have a wonderful rest of your week, and I will be back next week. Until then, take care.